Now, I'm a proper nerd, but as our business grows, I hate having multiple apps to track different things, having to remember all these logins for everything. And from what we're learning from our listeners, this is a big problem that's really affecting productivity.
Let's be honest, shall we? Mars Tech is just far too complicated. My brain isn't built for it. And most tasks take twice as long because before you can even start, you've got to remember which app has the stuff you need. Was it Google Docs? Did we store it in Asana? Do we even still use Basecamp?
HubSpot has got a great platform that can really help you if you feel the same as us. There's no more hours wasted on time-consuming tasks. There's no more chasing down like things like prospect information. And no more one system for this and one system for that.
Yep, if you and your teams are busy growing your business, then a HubSpot customer platform can help you find leads, reach prospects, and deliver the insights you need to convert them into customers all in one place. Oh, and the HubSpot AI can literally do more of your work for you, so you can focus more on scaling your business.
Visit HubSpot.com to learn how HubSpot's customer platform can help you grow your business.
Always forgive. I'm uncomfortable because I think forgiveness is almost irrelevant.
Hello and welcome to the Truth, Lies and Workplace Culture podcast. This is episode 8 and I'm Al.
I'm Leanne.
And if you've not listened before, just the format of the podcast is very much that Leanne is the expert in workplace culture, anything to do with engagement, leadership, etc., etc. I'm not the expert, but I do own a couple of businesses and so therefore I'll be quizzing her and translating the science that comes out of her mouth into stuff that we can actually, as business owners, we can actually implement. Anything to add to that, Leah?
No, I'm ready to be translated.
So today we are going to be talking about positive work cultures. Now, this is based on an article, I think, Leah, that did you find this article?
It did. It popped up on my LinkedIn feed, actually, yeah.
And it was originally, it was published in the Harvard Business Review, and it's by a lady called Emma Sapala and another one called Kim Cameron, which Emma's from Yale School of Management and Kim is a professor of management at the University of Michigan. Now, when you originally read this article, what were your initial thoughts on this, Leah?
I think as a psychologist, I appreciated the overarching narrative. In terms of somebody who has worked in businesses and with business owners, it all just sounded a bit like, well, that's nice, but how can I actually make that work commercially? It all sounds just a bit too woo and a bit too friendly and a bit too not real worldy. So I saw it and I just thought this might be an interesting thing for us to touch on and just translate some of the truth and maybe some of the potential lies of what the authors are saying a positive culture is as presented in this article. Of course, these are very specialist people. I'm not competing with professors from the University of Michigan or Yale, certainly not. But I think we're not saying they're wrong. We're saying as consultants in workplace culture, we think that sometimes this level of best practice needs some translation just to help SMEs better understand it as a concept and also to leverage the techniques in a way that's actually going to work for their business.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the issues that as a non-professional, I come across when I read stuff, particularly very academic or stuff that's come from an academic sort of person. Is that I go, well, that's all well and nice. And perhaps if I was Google, IBM, or someone with a budget of 10 million a year to spend on my people, then yes, that would be the thing we're going for. But the fact is that if with most businesses, you're growing, you need to make sure that you spend your money as responsibly as you possibly can, but also look after your people. And so I think what will be interesting about this is to go through their ideas and then say, right, what is it that we can actually take from this and apply to a smaller business who perhaps don't have or doesn't have the budget that larger businesses might have? So we start off with this idea. I mean, the headline of the article is proof that positive work cultures are more productive. But I don't think I understand what a positive work culture is. So can you explain what is a positive culture?
Yeah, so in psychology, if you're reading anything psychology-based and you see the word positive, that comes from a movement called positive psychology, which was founded by a guy called Martin Seligman in the late 90s. He was the president of the American Psychological Association. His mandate at the time was to start to shift the mindset that psychologists were bringing to human behavior. So where the focus traditionally was on mental illness, maladaptive behaviors, negative thinking, and how we address those to a point where someone can function normally, in inverted commas, it builds more on the movements of humanistic movements and encourages an emphasis on the more positive aspects. So how we can help people get from kind of surviving to thriving.
So if I've understood that correctly, then the traditional thinking was more like a sticky plaster or a medicine or something to fix the problem, the ailment. Whereas the positive work culture is more about how to eat healthily, how to take vitamins so that you don't get in that situation in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as a psychological school of thought, it's kind of going from rather than just focusing all of our efforts on the problems and getting them to a point where they are then functioning, how do we actually start with what's functioning and make changes to make them thrive? So if we're looking at that in an organisational culture perspective, maybe rather than necessarily focusing on perhaps very small areas of toxicity within your culture, it's putting your time and attention into those people who are currently functioning well within your business and helping them thrive and in turn helping your business thrive, focusing on the positive aspects.
Okay, so if I've got 20 employees and one of them I know is on Facebook half the time and another one is long-term absent and doesn't seem very engaged when they're here, but the other 18 are pretty well engaged, then am I right in thinking that positive culture is basically building on the strength of the other 18 first before we, rather than going straight for the two, which I'm not sure about, and trying to fix that?
Yes, but I think this is where my first question mark with how this article is presented comes up. And that is the fact that, to me, I don't necessarily think positive culture is a type of culture. And what you explained there was what I'd call an engaging culture. So we talked about this on the podcast before, but it's about how leaders can actually put their efforts into the people who are engaged rather than disengaged, and how that's going to have much more benefits for you, both in the short and in the long term. For me, when I'm looking at something like this explanation of a positive culture, to me, it feels more like an organizational climate as opposed to an organizational culture.
Okay, well, you've just used a phrase there that I've not really come across before, organizational climate. So what the hell is an organizational climate versus the culture?
So climate is more about staff's perceptions of how the work environment is currently impacting them, impacting the team, impacting their work, impacting their well-being. Climate is fairly changeable and it can fluctuate. So for example, if you're in an organization, say you are in a school, and your school typically is all about teamwork, it's very much around positive relationships and enablement, but then you get announced that officers are coming in to inspect. Your organizational climate is going to shift very quickly. It's going to become more about, right, process driven. How do we show this? How do we achieve that? How do we evidence this? How do we get everybody to hit these deadlines very quickly? The climate is going to change to facilitate the current challenge that the organization is going through. Culture, on the other hand, is much more ingrained within the norms and the expected behaviors of a workplace. So it's less on what is being done and how it's being done.
So if you are a creative agency and you win a big project, it's coming towards the end of this deadline, then your climate might be one of like, we've got to rush, we've got to make sure this work good and done on time, et cetera, et cetera. That might not necessarily affect the culture, which is everyone does the best they possibly can and really cares about the customer or the client. But you're saying that the culture can fluctuate throughout perhaps a year, whereas the climate can fluctuate throughout the year, whereas the culture ideally would stay the same.
Yeah, unless there's a fundamental change within the business, rapid growth, for example, that can threaten the existing culture within the business. But if you don't go through a significant change, then culture is going to be fairly stable unless you're either an intervention or something happens to the business. Whereas climate is going to fluctuate with both the individuals and the environment in which they operate.
So how does a business owner manage the climate or create an engaging climate?
So I think really with climate, we first need to think about culture, because climate is also one of those things that fairly uncontrollable depending on the other influences on the business. So for example, at the moment, the cost of living crisis is causing significant challenges for businesses, both in terms of the kind of the financial implications of that and also the well-being of staff potentially. So climate is also a phenomenon of external factors that are uncontrollable. We always like to focus on what is controllable. So I think if we first look at culture, the tricky thing with culture is there's no real agreed definition on culture. And again, we've touched on this before when we talk about recruiting for culture fit, and that is one of the first issues. That said, some more recent research has looked at hundreds of models on culture, and it's found that there's 8 typical types of culture, essentially mapped on a scale of how people interact, whether they are independent or interdependent, and how they adapt to change. So are they operating in environments that are typically quite flexible and rapidly changing, or are they in environments that are quite stable? The important thing with this research and what was concluded is that of these 8 culture types, there isn't one that's superior to the other. They all come with their advantages and disadvantages. So if we take 2 opposite cultures, so in terms of how these cultures are mapped, the 2 that would be considered kind of polar opposites of each other. So one of the cultures of the 8 cultures that was identified is called a caring culture. So a caring culture will focus on relationships, mutual trusts. Work environments are going to be very warm, very collaborative, very welcoming places. They're going to be defined by people who really help and support one another. They'll go out their way to help and support one another. And employees typically are united by a sense of meaning, loyalty, and leaders are really going to emphasize the sincerity behind teamwork and these positive relationships. Think something like the NHS is going to have typically a caring culture.
Okay, well, I mean, that sounds like something that everybody wants, this culture. So how can you have a culture which is opposite?
Well, the thing with a caring culture, I mean, the advantages are you are going to have improved teamwork, engagement, communication, trust, and that huge sense of belonging. But the disadvantage of that is there may be an overemphasis on consensus. It may be very difficult to explore new options. It might stifle competitiveness. Slow decision-making is likely to creep in. I mean, I'm sure if you speak to anybody who works in organizations that are very purpose-led, change is something that can be very, very difficult to implement. And that in itself can really stagnate growth. The opposite culture is what's called a results-driven culture. So it's very much about achievements and it's very goal-focused. So whereas you're going to have this improved execution that a caring culture may not, you're also going to have a lot more of focus on goal achievement, on capability building, much more of a competitive nature, not necessarily between the team, but externally with other organizations. The downside of this is there may be an overemphasis on achieving results, and that may lead to breakdowns in communication and collaboration, and also high levels of stress and anxiety if people aren't managed in a way to make sure they're not burning themselves out and they have the right levels of resilience to deal with this more high-pressured environment. Neither culture is perfect. Each has their advantages and disadvantages. And I think really by understanding the culture that you currently have and then laying over an engaging climate, then in a business leader, you're going to be able to moderate any of the potential disadvantages of the current culture. A quick podcast recommendation for you. If you haven't listened to Content is Profit with the amazing Louise and Fonzi Kamecha recently, then you're missing out on great guests, crazy hosts, and the secret behind something they call the frictionless sale. If you're anything like me, you're not really going to get on with those sales, bro, woof, kind of podcasts. And, you know, if that's the case, then these guys are a refreshing change for you.
One of the episodes I listened to recently was How to Outsmart Google in 2024. If you publish anything on the interwebs, then you know you need to rank on Google. Their guest, Jason Barnard, talks you through all the secrets you need to know to outsmart Google this year. Listen to Content is Profit wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, so let's take this to a more practical view of this. So we're going to pick a business. Let's say it's an accountancy firm. And their culture is obviously results, but also carefulness and, you know, a bit of attention to detail, et cetera, et cetera. So that is their culture. But then when it comes to tax season, when they've got to submit everyone's tax returns on by the 31st of January for the UK, then I'm imagining that the climate at that point is going to be a bit more frenetic. It's going to change slightly. Is that right or not?
Yes. Yeah, it might well do. And as you say, it's very likely that organisations are going to have a dominant culture and then kind of a secondary culture. So as you said there, you know, an organisation that is in an area that works in compliance and regulation in within the law, there is going to have to be an element of a culture called order, which is more rule abiding, more cooperative, as a big focused on operational efficiency. There is, you know, an emphasis on rules and things that need to be followed. So what you might find in areas where the climate will shift, this secondary culture may come to the fore.
Okay, that makes sense. So I mean, moving back onto this article, if I remember, they've got six characteristics of a positive workplace culture. And there's one that just jumped out at me, which it didn't feel right or practical, actually. It might have been right, but as a business owner, I'd be like, this doesn't seem practical. And that was that one of the essential characteristics was avoiding blame and forgiving mistakes. Now, as a business leader, how can we make that work commercially? If we're not able to hold people to account, then, you know, if someone goes and messes up massively, I go, oh, don't worry, it's all right. It's all right. It's not all right. It's pretty far from all right. So how do we hold people to account, but still incorporate this idea of avoiding blame and forgiving mistakes?
Yeah, so it's a really good point, and it is one as well that really stood out to me when I read through. I mean, what this is essentially referring to is in a culture, is a learning culture. And we know that learning cultures have very positive relationships with both well-being and performance. So learning cultures are very open, they're very inventive, it's all about exploration. You know, creativity really is at the heart of a learning culture. What that also means as well, to allow that level of creativity and innovation, is high levels of psychological safety. And to be psychologically safe, we need to know that we can make mistakes and we're not going to be blamed or immediately fired for doing them. So if we think Elon Musk, if we think Tesla, SpaceX, you know, they're very focused on innovation. Innovation at that level is quite literally world changing. The man's trying to get us on a colony on Mars in the next 30 years. But if you look at, you know, the Starship prototypes, I think they must be on number 15 now because they keep blowing up or missing their landing. Or so in that sense, you know, the learning culture isn't about blaming. You know, I think blame in general, whatever organization, is not going to be a very productive thing to do, because then also as a leader, if you're blaming somebody, you're not taking accountability for your role in whatever it happened for this mistake to happen. So I'm half with them. No blame is really good. Always forgive. I'm uncomfortable because I think forgiveness is almost irrelevant. Yes, you forgive. You know, you're not going to hold a grudge for somebody who makes a mistake. That's not going to be productive. But at the same time, you need to help people learn from their mistakes. You need to help your teams learn from mistakes. You need to reflect on what went well, what went wrong, where were the red flags, what did we miss, what could we do differently in the future, what can we learn from this situation to make sure it doesn't happen again and we get better outcomes for the business, for ourselves, and for our customers. There is a point, however, where the learning could stop and somebody, an individual or a team, continues to make the same mistakes over and over again. Now, it's at this point that I think always forgiving becomes a little bit counterproductive. It's bad for you and it's bad for your business, but also it's bad for that individual. Very few people come to work every day with the intention of doing a bad job, but they may be in the wrong role for them. They might be in the wrong team. They might just not have the strength, the skills, knowledge, the abilities to do this job at the level at which it needs to be done. At that point, your responsibility as a leader is to either help that person find another job within the organization that is more fitting to their skills, or work with them to manage them out of the business, because ultimately repeated mistakes is not sustainable for a business that is in growth.
Let me ask you then, because there's a fair bit in that article about social relationships. But as a manager or a leader, do I want to be friends with my employees? Do I want them to be friends with each other? Is that the right or wrong thing to do? What do you think?
I think undoubtedly positive relationships in the workplace are going to have a positive impact on engagement, on well-being, performance. You know, good relationships with our peers, our managers, our leaders, they're really important, and they have, you know, evidence shows they have direct impacts on our performance, on our well-being, on our physical health even. But what I fear this article is perhaps overemphasizing is the root of these positive relationships is in friendship, or dare I say, family. And I think this is where the risk and potential negative impacts could come. I mean, no one wants to performance manage their best mate if things aren't going well, right? But I think with these types of relationships, being a friend, being a family, it's more pulling out the principles and then reframing them to then apply within your business. So for example, in these types of relationships, friends and families, you know, that there is this healthy feeling of being able to challenge people, to have discussions, to be able to question why somebody believes a certain way, or to problem solve, or to innovate, or think about, well, what is the best way to cook the roast chicken on Sunday? And it's not a case of avoiding conflict, but it's a case of making sure that situations don't escalate to a point of conflict, and also dealing with any unacceptable behaviours within the workplace as well. Being empathetic with the challenges somebody is facing in their business. These are all aspects of that we'd find in friendships, we'd find in family relationships, and they will motivate people, they will help performance, they will nurture well-being, but they're done through the lens of an organization and through business management.
So you talked about empathy quite a lot there. And I think, I mean, I know that back in the day when you had a job, one of your best managers demonstrated a huge amount of empathy. And looking back 20 years ago when I used to work for people, then the worst bosses, the ones who weren't empathic. Is that right? Empathetic, empathic? Whichever the word is. So the best ones, the ones who did have this empathy. So as a leader, how are you going to develop this empathy or this empathic leadership style?
Yeah, and empathic leadership is something that's getting a lot more coverage at the moment, and it can be really effective in terms of motivating performance and nurturing well-being. I guess, first of all, to define what it is to be an empathic leader, demonstrating empathy, which is, you know, imagine we kind of use this analogy at Oblong, where if you imagine kind of a person who's in a hole, then sympathy is somebody standing, looking into the hole, going, "You all right? That looks bad. I'm so sorry this has happened to you." Empathy is when that second person who's not in the hole will get a ladder, get in the hole with them and go, "Wow, it's dark down here, isn't it?" That's empathy. And when you have real empathy for the challenges that your team are facing, that creates trust. And trust creates empowering and honest relationships between colleagues. And that's what in turn is going to increase collaboration and productivity. Because if you have honest relationships with your colleagues, you're going to have these behaviours, these rules that you're going to help somebody out if they need it. You're going to pick up overflow of workload if you've got the capacity, because you've got that trust, and that's what leads to collaboration and productivity. It's that feeling of being taken care of. So in terms of demonstrating empathic leadership, there are a few things that you can do to develop this within your approach. First of all, is just show genuine interest in others. And I think one thing that really bugged me is when, for example, an employee walks in, whether it's either to your office or over to your desk, and they say, "Is it okay if I talk to you for a second?" And the leader will be there typing an email and go, and not look at them, not look up, and go, "Yep, sure, what can I help you with?" And keep typing. That's not creating an environment where I can open up to you, where I can tell you what's going on or what I need help with. If that happens, stop what you're doing, turn your chair, look at them, and make sure that they are your only point of focus for the point of which they need to talk to you. That is what showing genuine interest in others is. And then, of course, you know, depending on the challenges that somebody is going through, be willing to help them, whether that's with a professional issue, whether it's with a personal issue. I'm not saying get deep into, you know, people's personal lives and help with that. But, you know, for example, if somebody is struggling to get a doctor's appointment for their son at a work time that is, you know, a time outside of work, then allow them an hour and a half off to take their kid to work, as kid to the doctor's. It's things like that that's just going to, again, foster this feeling of empathy, of trust, of mutual respect. And that in itself is going to encourage employees to give those extra efforts. As we mentioned before, one-to-one meetings, check-ins, not always keeping it to the formal kind of appraisals or, you know, monthly reviews. Just have a time in your diary where you're just going to meet somebody, find them up, see how they're doing. Maybe not even talk about work stuff. Just see what it is that's impacting them at the moment. And I think we just keep an eye out on people. We all, you know, those cues of people who are perhaps struggling a bit more, that maybe coming in a bit later than usually are, not looking as well presented, maybe not as engaged in conversations or as meeting. Keep an eye out for those warnings of burnout. And ultimately, you know, you can absolutely use your leadership instincts with this and your relationships with your team. But implementing some kind of employee analytics, some kind of employee engagement survey is going to help you understand how your people are currently feeling, so what your current climate is, and also translating that into your culture and how you can overlay this engaging climate with your company culture.
Fantastic. Okay, so we'll link to the article in the show notes. We also have an employee engagement product that we have ourselves, but it's not the only one on the market. There's plenty out there to choose from. Obviously, we think ours is the best. So if you go to oblonghq.com, there'll be a way you can get in touch with us there. If you've got any thoughts about the podcast, or you want to be a guest, or you want to recommend a guest, or just any kind of feedback, then just email us, podcast@oblonghq.com. And I think, is there anything else you want to add for today?
No, I think that's it.
Thank you for listening. And as ever, we're looking forward to your feedback. Bye for now.
Bye.